What up, Mountain Athletes? Corey here. I want to tell you about an exciting new service that's now available to the podcast listeners. It's called the Mountain Wellness Dispensary. Mike and I know how hard it is to navigate the supplement world, to know if you're taking the right ones. Sometimes you question if you're just wasting your money. So we make it easy for you. All you got to do is head over to our website at mountainwellness.life, click on the dispensary tab, and set up a personal profile. Once your profile's set up, you'll be able to browse all of the recommended supplements you hear about on the podcast, and you'll be able to browse many other products trusted by practitioners, physicians, and human performance coaches in our space. Again, head over to our website at mountainwellness.life, click on the dispensary tab, and you'll be on your way to shopping the top health and performance supplements in the industry.
Mountain Wellness, optimizing human performance to extend longevity for mountain athletes.
All right. Get down. What up, mountain athletes? Welcome to another episode of the Mountain Wellness Podcast. I'm your host, Corey Reed. And I'm joined, as always, with my mountain brother and co-host, Mr. Mike Mahina. What's going on, dude?
Yeah, California to Montana. Getting ready to put some miles on.
Can you share some of that sun? Some of that warm weather?
Yeah, sorry, man.
I don't know what happened over here.
I know, we were at a conference call yesterday. Corey's like, I hear birds, man. It's like snowing over there. I'm like, yeah, there's some birds out back here and some chimes going.
And by the way, happy Easter to everyone. I know we'll hopefully this podcast, Mike, will go out tomorrow morning, which will be Wednesday. We're 2 days late. Apologies on that one, but we got some good stuff in the works. We've talked enough about the breathwork course and we're putting the final touches on it. So one of the reasons why we're getting out of this episode a few days late. But yeah, it was, we took the kids to a birthday party on Saturday and it was about 30 minutes outside of town. And, it was freaking cold, man. It was 22 degrees snowing with the wind blowing like 20 miles an hour. And it was funny because Kayla's friend texted her right before, about an hour before. And she's like, hey, just so you know, we're going to have an Easter egg hunt for the kids.
Backyard barbecue.
So, and that's the funny part. And she goes, yeah, you might want to bring the kids some extra, you know, like warm clothes for the Easter egg hunt. And didn't really mention anything about us. So I'm like, all right, I know Montana. And if we're outside, even for the egg hunt, I want to make sure I'm layered up. So I had my down in like a base layer.
Yeah.
And so anyways, we get there. And like I said, it was snowing, 20 degrees outside, freaking wind. And they're like, yeah, you know, here the adults are going to come over here in the garage. You know, the garage is a nice windbreak. So they didn't even have us come inside. We were chilling in the garage. And I think the garage was even colder. So Kayla and I were kind of huddled up in the corner of the chairs together, just like, oh, damn, this is cold.
I'm trying to picture these kids. It's like, yeah, little Johnny, go over there. The Easter eggs are buried. They're buried in 2 feet of snow. Just roll up your sleeve and just dig around for a while. You'll find it. It's like, I'm not doing that. I'm out.
Yeah. I can't help to think about that too. Like, I like it in the fact that, you know, I grew up in SoCal, as you know, and, you know, we got pretty mild weather other than some heat through some of the season. But I was thinking about that. I'm like, damn, this is why Montanans are so damn tough, you know?
Yeah, they got to hunt for their eggs. They got to go through snow. And they're like, there's some ice over here. Get the hammer. I see it. It's buried.
It's crazy. Half the kids didn't even have mittens on or gloves. They're just like frozen fingers and crying. And man.
Us Californians, man, we wouldn't last long.
Oh, so did you have a good Easter weekend?
Oh, yeah.
Get together with the fam?
Family came down and visited, and it was nice because we've been working so much on the course and just doing all that, the extra work from that. So it was nice to unplug for a couple of days.
Yeah, amazing. Totally. I felt like it was, for me, a long weekend because of just this last week was so busy.
And much needed, yeah.
Yeah, I felt
should have seen us the week before. These conference calls with Shay, and we're like trying to. I kept trying to figure out the domain, and I was going around circles. And I'm like, at one point, I think the whole everything just kicked me out of the. I couldn't even get into my own course. I was like, all right, I quit for a while.
Yeah, and Mike and I are trying so hard not to be corporate, but you know, unfortunately, you can't not be if you want to structure your company and brand in the right way and make sure you're protected. So it's just we're trying as hard as we can not to be corporate, but yet we find ourselves juggling conference calls and just a lot's going on. But we can promise you that this our online training courses are going to be next level. And this first breathwork course is, I mean, I'm getting more and more excited about it. The more I'm in the platform and seeing the content and experiencing the content. So, and I've been comparing it to Mike. I don't know if I've mentioned this to you, but the people I've talked to, or like my friends and people in our immediate circle, I've kind of compared it to, I would imagine it's like writing a book and receiving that book back from the printer, the publisher for the first time and having it in your hands. And I might've mentioned this back, you know, on the previous episode, but it was pretty cool to have, all that knowledge in one space and content that, we've been working on pretty much the last 10 years. So I was pretty proud of that just, from, you know, what we put together.
Yeah, no, same here. It's been an incredible experience, you know, our whole friendship over 10 years and then to be here right now on putting this course together. It's been a great ride, man. Just been.
Yeah. And it's crazy. Right. And we're still getting like, you're getting emails, you know, from, Dr. George Dallum from Colorado State University and like, hey, check out this, you know, this new research study just emerged and really backing up and, solidifying a lot of our methodology that we got in the course. So it's exciting, man.
Yeah, and it's awesome too. Today we're going to have some guests on, I believe, that are part of the ultra endurance running, right? I mean,
Helena Ultra Runners. I butchered it when we talked to him. It's what is it? The Helena Ultra Runners League, right? Is that what it is? Yep, that's what it is. The Helena Ultra Runners League. Yeah, we're gonna have a conversation with John and Johnny, so the director and assistant director of the Elkhorn Endurance Run, and then they also put on the Mount Ascension run. I don't know the mileage on that one, but both are local races. The Elkhorn Endurance Run being an ultra, so it's a full on 100 miler, Mike. Is that what the distance was?
Yeah, I believe. Yeah. And it's, you know, I'm really interested in the culture because you know how every endurance sport or every sport in general has a certain culture attached to it of how they all kind of are similar in some ways. And I don't know the culture of endurance and ultra running. And I'd like to learn more about what makes these guys tick. And, you know,
I know it's so interesting because, as you know, I've been in my fitness pursuits for the last decade. On the competitive side, I started in 2012, competed in CrossFit. But right before I got into CrossFit, I thought about doing some triathlon stuff because I was really excited about fitness. And I linked up with this gentleman in SoCal. His first name was Chris. I'm blanking on his last name right now. But he was an ultra runner, and you know, this was 10 years ago. You know, the popularity, it's grown quite a bit. Racing in general, just trail running to all the way up to ultras. But you know, he used to talk about this race, this Badwater race, when I'd go ride with him. And it's a funny story because I used to ride tandem. I met him through this blind tandem group. I used to go out to Thousand Oaks, and all these blind people would meet up at the Carl's Jr. right on Westlake Boulevard there. Right there in Westlake. And then they would like link you up with these they call them stokers. We're the stokers, the guys on the back, and then the captains. So they'd have a sighted captain. So anyways, I got hooked up with this guy, Chris, who was this ultra runner, this badass, like, endurance athlete. And he used to talk about this Badwater race all the time. And he was buddies with Marshall. I'm so bad with last names, but I know he's won Badwater multiple times. I want to say upwards of 10 times.
Wow.
And I used to be blown away then because I didn't know much about that, you know, that world. And I just would think about, dude, these guys are running 100 miles. And for those that don't know Badwater, Badwater is an ultra event that's in California, starts in the lowest point of Death Valley below sea level. And they run 100 miles all the way to Mount Whitney portal at like 10,000 feet.
So, yeah, the portal's around 8 or 9 is where we where
or is it 8? Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit lower, but still the idea of going 100 miles regardless. On pavement. Yeah, it's insane.
And the elevation game, it's the psychology, the mental fortitude, like all that is pretty impressive. But I stopped riding with Chris. It was funny because I used to ride on the streets. And Mike, you know, you see those guys all the time, or anybody that lives in, you know, the suburbs or in bigger cities. I get so nervous because, you know, cars are whizzing by you. Oh, and then I could feel, we come up to a stoplight and I could feel the nerves. Like I could kind of feel a little bit of nervousness coming through the bike. And I'm like, this is kind of sketch, man. I can't see anything. I'm trusting
you are 100% on whatever that decision that guy makes. If he just like, Corey, I'm going to run the light. Hang on. You're just like, what? No, I get it. Wow. I never thought of that. You're right. Absolute trust in the person in the front, which is, you know, I mean, even if they're amazing at what they do, which clearly he was an athlete, it's still, you know, I would be really hard to let go, man. I know I would. It's like,
I'm glad I found CrossFit. I was out. I never did any triathloning, but who knows? Maybe in the future. I was talking with Kelby the other day. It would be cool to do some type of mountain triathlon where you had some like mountain type events.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kind of like, you know, intermixed with the elements. So I don't know, something to consider. Maybe in the future we'll host some sort of mountain games.
Yeah, just not 100 triathlon miles. Event. Let's start with a shorter one.
Speaking of mountain games, I've been getting the emails for this year's GoPro Mountain Games. I think it's taking place on June 5th or the weekend right around there. Man, and I'm just like, with the experience we had last year, I'm just getting hyped to get back up there this year. Especially with this race season, man. Everybody that's coming into the den, all the athletes, everybody's like talking about all the races they got coming up.
Yeah. No, it's exciting.
You can just, right? It's a good year. This post pandemic stuff, people are excited to get out and start racing again.
Right.
So, sweet. Well, should we go have a conversation with the director and assistant director of the Helena Ultra Racers League, Johnny and John? What do you think?
Yeah, and they're both runners, right? I mean, they both have a huge background in running. So, yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, I believe I spoke to Johnny briefly on the phone before we recorded the podcast, and I know he's got some background and coaches some ultra athletes and also runs himself. And then John seems like a badass. He's like that total Montanan type.
Got that bison blood.
The bison blood. Yeah, let's go talk to Johnny and John and hear all about the Elkhorn Endurance Race and also other races they put on here in our local community. And just so you guys know, we're rolling. So
yeah, everything's recording.
No formal. All
right, sounds good.
Yeah, we're good. We're on the podcast. So welcome to the show, guys.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, Mike, go ahead. You were talking about your Eastern Sierra pursuits.
Oh no, yeah, just that every summer since I was a kid, and Corey actually as well, growing up, we didn't know each other, but we spent our times in the summer back there just searching in the backcountry. It's just a fun place to just discover things and adventure and backpacking and all that kind of stuff. And
nice.
Yeah.
Real quick, I got to grab my coffee. Hold it down, Mike,
for a second. And then we, but now I did start doing trail running recently, about 3 years ago. and I fell in love with it, which I did. I never thought I'd be a runner, which was crazy because I'm not a runner, and now I am. I go like 3 days a week. I'm out on the trail, and I truly love it out there. Like that's my place where I can kind of exercise, breathe, and disconnect from everything. So it's become I'm sure as you guys must know, it becomes a kind of what do you call that space that you can get into that you can't get anywhere else almost, you know, especially in California. I'm in the
mountain
city,
wellness.
So. Yeah, right. Mountain wellness. That's it.
Where did you get into trail running here in Montana or back in the Sierras?
I'm in California. Okay. So I have an area here nearby that I can just run for 5 to 10 miles at a time. And
Mike, they both just took a deep breath because you said California.
I know. Right? Uh-oh. It's California to Montana.
That's right. So Southern California is home to, or what previously was, that's where I grew up and lived for 30 plus years. And then I moved to Helena 5 years ago. So I'm fully aware of the California jokes as a transplant myself.
That's awesome. California, actually, John here hiked, did you hike the whole PCT or good?
Yeah, 1977, I hiked the entire Pacific Crest Trail solo.
Oh, okay. That's 1,500 miles. That's a big one.
Yeah, it's closer to 2,000 miles anyway.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, through Oregon and Washington as well. Yeah.
Oh, so he knows solace like probably none of us do, right? Were you alone? Did you go alone?
I soloed most of it. Sometimes you ran into other people doing it, so I joined them for days or sometimes even weeks because it's a long trail. It took me 5 months to do it. So.
Wow. That's unbelievable. That's an incredible experience you must have had. I mean, that's just.
And that was before lightweight backpacking gear, too.
Pretty much. So. My pack at one time weighed over 80 pounds. Yeah.
Is that right? Wow. Yeah. Now you can. Yeah. It's a freeway.
Just what you could bring was a lot different that you can now.
Yeah.
Mike just did last, June or July, Mike? Summit in Mount Whitney.
Whoa.
Last summer.
Yeah. I haven't done Whitney. Yeah, okay. Last summer. So that was it was part of our breathwork course that we got coming out. We did a little testing, but Mike, that was a beast. I know you can speak on that. I can't. He did it in the one day. They didn't camp at first camp or whatever they call it at Whitney Portal or what's it called, Mike? That first camp?
Trail camp is where you can camp at, but you do the ascent the next day, but you can get permits pretty easy for the one day because nobody wants to do it. Most people get sick. Out of 30,000 people that climb it, only 10,000 make it just because of the altitude of the rapid ascent and all that.
Yeah, I've coached a few athletes through the Badwater 135 that starts in Death Valley and then it doesn't summit Whitney, but it finishes right there at the portal.
Right.
Yeah. Right at portal, yeah.
So that's kind of a...
That's a gnarly race. And for the listeners, it starts at below sea level in Badwater, Death Valley. Yep. And it goes all the way up to Whitney Portal, which I don't know, what's that, around 11,000 feet?
10 or 11,000.
Yeah. 10 or 11, yeah. So, yeah, not only are you doing an ultra and putting that kind of miles on, but you're dealing with the elements going from below sea level to... a hypoxic environment, pretty gnarly.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting race to kind of be on the other side and observe it and help out because the runners start to get a little delirious and fatigued. So
I can only imagine.
Yeah,
yeah.
I trained with I don't know if you're familiar with Marshall Aldridge or Aldridge.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go. So one of his training partners, I used to do. Back, like I never ended up doing a triathlon, but this guy Chris was coaching me, and he knew Marshall really well, and he would tell me some of the stories at the end of Badwater, which he actually ran as well. And he's like, "Yeah, when you get to the end, it's basically it's anything goes. People are running next to you, giving you pizza, a shot of espressos. Like dudes are just like anything you can do to get to the end. I can't even imagine something like that.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal."
So have you Johnny, have you ran that?
No, I have not. To be honest, I don't really have much interest in running it. It's most of it's on the watch. All of it's on the road. And so it's pretty hard on the body, you know, to do that.
I can imagine.
So yeah, I prefer to be out in the mountains on the trails. So
same here. It's a big difference.
Yeah.
I won't run on concrete.
Yeah.
Blacktop.
It's not something I really enjoy, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
What about you, John? You you do the ultras?
Ultras. You do the long distance and doing stuff now. I've completed 21 100 milers, and I couldn't tell you how many 50Ks or 50 milers because I don't keep track of them. But both of us are signed up for the Hard Rock 100 this year, so it's going to be a party down at Silverton, Colorado this year.
That's unbelievable. So you're going to do another 100-mile race?
Yeah.
Okay, so I got to learn the psychology and the mindset of this endeavor, because I know it's getting really popular doing these races, but just running, you know, 10 to 15 miles for me, I can do it and recover in a day and I'm okay. But, you know, you add 90 more miles to that and I don't know what I look like at that point. Like, I don't know. So I got to understand like the mindset and the belief, and then like how you guys get to, what's the finish line like? I mean, this is an amazing endeavor for people to do these things.
Yeah. Well, I think that you hit on one thing there, is that you're kind of thinking about how do I go another 90 miles? You're kind of already, you're kind of thinking about the giant task at hand. So I think what helps a lot of ultra runners is to kind of break it into small little chunks that are easier to wrap your head around. So for you, it might be the 10 mile run. Let's just do 10 miles. Okay. Let's do another 10 miles. So you're not even thinking about the 90 miles that you have or the 80 miles left. You're just thinking about 10 miles at a time. And then before you know it, you're
10 miles, 10 times.
Miles, 10 gotcha.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. It still comes out to 100. but I follow what you're saying. Yeah. The psychology is like, you're okay. I just got to go 10 more. That's it.
Yeah. And I like to tell the athletes I coach is to challenge the stories or the narratives that come up. That's often the case, is that our brains are quick to try and tell us to stop or that we're not capable of continuing on. But usually when we take steps, we find that the story is not in fact true and we can't keep going. Obviously in a safe way, I don't think it's good to run through injury personally. But it's really amazing when you challenge that, what you can do. So.
And how you feel at the, go ahead, Corey.
Go ahead, Mike. No, you're good. Go
at
ahead.
The end of a race, so you've completed, if you get to the end of the race, what kind of feeling do you have? I mean, there has to be some kind of, I mean, John's doing this. How many times again? Tell us again how many times you've done these 100 mile races?
I finished 21. Yeah,
both. Right. So there's a
DNF'd once.
There's a feeling he's getting at the end of these. There's got to be some kind of payoff. I'm just curious, like what it does for you guys.
Yeah, there's a feeling of euphoria. I remember doing my first one. I think I was too tired to realize it. It was like the next day. It's just, wow, what did I just do? And I just kind of threw up my hands up and then put out a big hurrah saying, I did it.
Wow.
Right. So since we're really geared, this podcast and Mountain Wellness in particular is around health and performance. Did you notice, you know, now that you've done 21, I know I can answer the first part. I know your training, your strategy going into it has changed quite a bit, but could you speak on that a little bit? You know, as far as recovery and how you're training, like how you train now versus the first, because, you know, you mentioned that you were tired after that first one. And I would imagine that's probably some things that you've learned over the years that you don't experience as much now.
I think you still experience it. It's still quite a exciting thing to finish these things. Big party, as I call it. My training basically has I age, I kind of go down. You know, I don't train as hard as I did back in the old days, but I still put in, you know, 60-mile weeks and that type of thing. Because really this game is a lot of psychology. You know, it's all in your head to keep going, just put that one foot in front of the other and just keep it up. Like John was saying, put it down into little segments at a time and mm-hmm. keep her going.
Yeah. And that's why I asked, because the volume that it takes to prepare for an endurance event, especially an ultra, you gotta be dialed. But on the other hand, ultra or endurance events, especially that mileage, doesn't lend to overall health and wellness if you exceed a certain volume. So I can only imagine tapering. And then also on course, we talked to Montana athlete, ex mountain biker Rose Grant, who won the Butte 100. She was talking about it all came down to fueling and maintaining heart rate, like your pacing and fueling. Where I've had other amateur athletes that I'm coaching here, where they have had these experiences where they come out of the gate too hard, you know, the first say 20 miles, and they blow their gasket because they're working in this anaerobic zone. And I feel like that's a big challenge for endurance, especially ultra events.
100%. I think a lot of it comes down to just, you know, taking care of yourself. You know, it's pretty apparent the athletes that neglect that, they don't tune into their body, you know, could be just like, yeah, pacing a bit too quick or not fueling or hydrating. And if that's the case, your body's not going to want to continue to push through the mountains like that. So I think a lot of it comes down to just being kind to your body. And if you're kind to your body, then it's like, let's go on a ride. Let's ride through the mountains and see some cool stuff and push.
And that's and you bring up a good point. You know, you guys are talking about, or we're talking about ultra or long distance events in the mountains, which with elevation, low oxygen environments, like now you're adding another element of stress to the body versus say going and doing an ultra at sea level or something like that. Completely, like you're adding a lot more stress to the body. So it's impressive.
Oh, what's the elevation on the current race you're about to do? You could tell us a little bit about it, maybe.
Yeah, let's. That's why we got you on the podcast today. So you guys are director and assistant director of the Helena Ultra Racing. Sorry, I just butchered that. What organization are you guys?
Helena with? Ultra Runners League.
Helena Ultra Runners League. That's right.
That's the group that puts on the Elkhorn Endurance Run, and also the Moonlight on Mount Ascension as well. And then we do group runs during the week, which we're trying to get more runners out for that. It's been a little, trying to get more people. A
little challenging the last couple of years.
You know, there's a lot of different groups in town, so that makes it a little bit harder for people to kind of figure out which group they kind of fit into. But there's group runs that take place. And obviously the Elkhorn Endurance Run is a big part of the club as well.
Cool. So the Helena Ultra League puts on the big, so your guys' biggest event is the Elkhorn Endurance Race.
Yeah.
Is that your premier?
Yeah, that's it. And the Elkhorn started back in 1986. And so it is actually one of the oldest, or is the oldest single track ultra in the state of Montana. So there is an older ultra, the La Grizz, up in the Flathead, but that's on mostly roads, dirt roads.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And the Elkhorn is like, I've been up there just hiking and doing some adventuring, and it's rugged mountains for those that aren't in the Helena area and haven't been up in the Elkhorns. This is there's some badass mountains. So I can't, doing a 100-mile race through there would be gnarly. Can you guys give us a little rundown of what the course looks like for, because we have a lot of local listeners in the Helena area and even beyond that, Bozeman and Missoula. And I would imagine a lot of our listeners have either ran it or are thinking about running this year's Elkhorn. So you guys want to give us a rundown of what it looks like as far as the course and the different, so I know there's a few different distance that you guys are offering. It's not just the full 100.
Yeah, so 50 mile and a 50 care are ultras. We do offer for beginners that want to just try out trail running, we offer a 13 mile race also. They're all three are big loops, basically. the Elkhorn race, we start at Roller Creek and go all the way. The 50 miler goes all the way to the town of Elkhorn, which is a historic little town. It's kind of beautiful. And then we get into some pretty tough climbing right up on the top of Elkhorn Peak area, almost the top, not quite. And into some beautiful country in the back, Tizer Basin area. It's actually considered one of the toughest 50-mile, 50Ks around because of the elevation gain. And the their technical trails are not easy.
Yeah.
Well, it's an old volcanic island mountain range. So when you have a volcanic range, it's going to be very crumbly, the rock. So you have a lot of technical footing. And then also going through some of the meadows there are pretty technical. They're kind of clumpy. At that time of year, it can be pretty boggy. So, you know, really wet feet, you're crossing creeks and things like this. So also the burn areas too. If it's a hot year, you come through some of the burn areas and there's no relief from the heat and the sun. So I think what makes the Elkhorn tough is the elements, is the footing. It's just the, you know, decent elevation gain. The 50 mile has over 10,000 feet. And I've done some other races that have about 10,000 feet as well. And again, I think it's the footing and the technicality of certain sections of the course that really make it really hard.
When I get tired, I notice I start to drag my feet. And that's one thing I've learned in rock, when you're running over rock debris and stuff, if you get tired and you don't lift those feet up, you're going down, which is, I've done at least twice now.
Going down or bashing your toe on a rock.
But mainly for me, just tripping over a rock, you know, just cause you're dragging, you know, I've had that happen. And it's like, oh man, get your feet up. As soon as you feel that tired, it's like, get your feet up.
Yeah.
It's amazing how tired your brain can be, because you do have to concentrate on where your steps are going and lifting your feet, like you said. So it's amazing how tired your brain can be by the end of a 50 mile run.
I can only imagine.
The other thing that's unique, the Elkhorn range, quick. I just want to say another unique part of the range itself is it's one of the only wildlife management units, specifically in regards to the elk population there. So a lot of people know the Elkhorn Mountains through the hunting district, 380, Unit 380. Yeah. So it's a kind of a prized area in the state of Montana to hunt. So there's some big bull elk in the Elkhorn Mountains, hence the name Elkhorns. But it's a unique in that management unit is actually one of the only ones in the national forest system. So it's kind of unique. There's not another one like it in the country. So.
Yeah, at the recovery den here, we're right at the base of the Elkhorns, and we got elk in season that come right through Montana City and can hear them bugling, and it's and there's some big boys. I'm surprised sometimes. I'm like, damn, you know, you think that they'd be out in this this area completely, you know, not visible, and here they are strolling down the our neighborhood street. A herd of them. That's pretty cool. I was talking to, do you guys know Scott Kinner with Montana City Fire Department, Volunteer Fire Department? Because I know they do some, don't they do some volunteer work with you guys?
Yeah, definitely. Actually, funny. We were actually, John and I were just down there last night at the fire station meeting with the group. Scott actually wasn't in house, but they've been a huge help with the race. Over the years.
Yeah, he's told me some stories, and he's like, because he's a trail runner, you guys know, but he's not an ultra runner, and he was telling me about the Elkhorn, because I think he might have even introduced one of us through email I don't know, over a year ago, but anyways he was talking about how the access, like, it's not, you know, we don't have well-funded fire departments where it's just they can drop in on a with a chopper and airlift someone out when they're hurt. So he was talking about how they, and you guys can speak on it better than I can, but the bikes with the backboards on them. And if someone does get hurt or they have to rescue them or get them out of there, they're like literally walking them out on these sort of makeshift backboard utilizing a bike. And he was talking about that was kind of a gnarly part of the Elkhorn endurance race, that it's, you really got to be self-sufficient, and there's people that go out there that don't really think about. And that's probably, you guys can speak on that too. Some of the
preparation,
safety and what to expect and maybe things to be prepared for if they are going to do a race like this.
Yeah, definitely. We've had over the years, some runners that have gotten into some trouble, not being fully prepared for the elements. Cause we get runners that come from out of state, Georgia. I have an athlete coming up from Arizona this year to run, fed athletes from Japan. And so, as you guys know, Montana, anything can happen. So even though a first weekend in August, it can snow on you, you know? And so if you don't have a,
especially in your elevation.
So hypothermia is a big risk, being up at elevation. The temps can drop pretty quick. Could also, again, heat stroke or anything like this, being in those burn areas, if it's really hot and you didn't, hydrate properly in between aid stations, you can get yourself into a tough spot there. And so again, going back to the volunteer groups, but they're huge in making Elkhorn, a success and safe for the runners, because if a runner does get themselves into a situation, say back in Tizer Basin, Elk Park area, we've got the ATV group that's out there. We've got the Elkhorn Search and Rescue. We've got the Montana City Volunteer Fire Department that can all lend a hand to help get them out. And that getting the athletes or getting the runners out, that's not an easy task when you've got, quite a bit of vertical and everything to get the runners out. So it's kind of a team effort for sure.
There's only one.
Yeah, amazing. That's one thing.
Accessible by car. The rest of them are either ATV or you're hiking in. We have one aid station at Elk Park, top of a hill. That the only way people get in and out of there is with horseback. So it's pretty remote.
Always wondered how.
Yeah, that's
what the distance is of the aid stations. How you base? Is it an hour or is it several hours? Like how you base the distance between the running to the stations for hydration and.
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes down to what's realistic for the runners to actually carry on person. You're not going to be. Or we don't encourage runners to carry. 4 liters of water with them, So I think realistically, like 2 liters is, a liter is 2 pounds. So if you have 4 pounds of fluid on your back, that's, I think sufficient to be able to get from A to B. So typically, anywhere between an hour to 2 hours in between checkpoints is, I'd say, pretty common. Yeah. So.
Oh, that's pretty good then.
Since you do coaching, do you find people focus let me rephrase this. Do you find people lack electrolytes or don't think about electrolytes as it relates to hydration on ultra events especially?
Yeah, for sure. I think it can be a tricky one to figure out. I do encourage athletes to do their own kind of experiments and training. So I have athletes do sweat tests just to get an idea of what that fluid turnover is, say per hour. And that way you have a pretty good idea of, how much to replace within an hour. And obviously you don't want to replace 100% of that fluid loss, but you want to get, say, within 80%. But yeah, a lot of athletes, they drink, and this can be an issue, hyponatremia, where you take in too much fluid and you're actually diluting your blood sodium levels. So yeah, making sure that you're taking in the sodium, whether it's through your nutrition or through salt tabs or hydration mixes, pretty important. So,
For sure. We've all had our day with that.
We had one athlete that fell out of the Butte 100 this year, and I know it was directly related to electrolytes.
Funny story along with the hydration and the Elkhorn race. The Elkhorn race was my second ultra back in 2011, and ran into a local Montana legend, Bob Hayes, who I think at the time
I've heard that name
thrown around. Missoula. He was based out of Missoula. And I think he had to be, 80 years old, maybe 81. And he was out doing the 50K, and I run into him. He's sitting there dipping into a creek. He's dipping into a creek with a Dixie cup that he picked up from one of the aid stations. So his hydration system was reusing the cups from the aid station. He didn't have a bottle or a hydration pack or anything like that. And So not to say I encourage that and that's the way to go, but just kind of, you know, everyone has their own way of approaching fueling and hydrating.
Yeah, we can't do that here in the Sierra.
Yeah, I mean, right. And genetics are a factor. My dad, he's a roofing contractor in his younger years. They used to call him the camel because he'd go up in 100 degree weather, be on the roof for 8 hours, wouldn't come down other than lunch to drink a Coke, and he just work all day. Ended up catching up to him later, like in his later 50s. He ended up getting a pretty severe case of vertigo, and I know it was directly related to that, but it's interesting, and it's amazing how resilient the body is. And these type of endurance events, I think, test it probably more than any other endeavor, athletic endeavor for that matter.
Mm-hmm. I can see you pointing at very much how essential it is to know your body extremely well, like to really understand what it needs and what it, you know, what it needs before you go wandering out there. I get that. That's really important.
So as we're talking about this, it just makes me think about, like, do you guys have some advice for, because we have trail runners, and I know some of them are thinking about doing some longer distance type stuff, and maybe even down the line signing up for an ultra. Do you guys have any, based on your experience, you know, any advice as far as progressing, or do you just jump right in and just sign up for that big ultra, or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think like a good way to progress, and obviously it depends on what the distance that they've already done, but it's just to get out in the mountains and, you know, be curious, go out and discover, go out and hike, you know, like I think it's fun to get in some longer days on foot where you're not necessarily running the whole time, but you're doing quite a bit, just hiking around. And I think you'd be amazed at how much distance you can cover just by walking. Mm. So, and it's a little bit more gentle and easier on the body when you hike too. So, I think it can help someone that's new to the sport, just kind of realize like what they're capable of and how far they can go. And that walking is actually part of trail running. And, it can be a really great way to see a lot of cool country. So.
Yeah, I can. And I've heard this, the Elkhorn Endurance Race is one of the most beautiful races there are. I guess the views are incredible.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite part is running through some of the meadows. 2 years ago, running the race, I was running next to a herd of, I don't know how many head, but probably at least 40 head of elk, just running right next to me in the meadow.
Dang.
And you've got the mist coming over the meadows that you kind of pop through the timber, and then it's a nice, beautiful meadow with a nice view. And so, yeah, I think the Elkhorn Mountains are a pretty special spot for sure.
Rad. One thing I noticed that I loved that you guys mentioned on the website about how this there's a lot of hype around ultras and just this just ultra racing, and this is really a family community focused event. And I think the volunteers, the partners, you guys being a nonprofit really speaks on that. And I know with Mountain Wellness and the Recovery Den here, it's like that's my favorite part about being here in Helena is just the community aspect of it, in Montana in general. It's a special place. So I could only imagine how, I know I'll be up there this year. Mike, we got to fly you out so we can get up to the race this year to be spectators.
Oh, that would be fun. You know, it's funny. I always tell Corey, whenever I land in Montana, it's the smallest airport I've ever been in. It feels like a home though. But people think, I know that people compare airports, but it's funny because I come into Las Vegas, I'm like, get me out of here. But then I land in Montana, it's like this big woodsy house. And I'm like, oh, everything's, it's just so relaxing to, you can just breathe. And like Corey's talking about the community there. When I'm there, I find the Montana people so friendly and easy to talk to and willing to lend a hand more than anywhere else I've ever been to in other places. And so,
yeah,
that's one of the things that keeps me coming back, I think.
Yeah, and it sounds totally. And it sounds like you guys' partners really speak on that. So a good example. All right. For our listeners, I know we got some racers. Where can they find more info if they want to check into it or Anybody wants to sign up? Where can we send them?
Yeah, so people interested, they can go to the website, check out more about the race at hurlelkhorn.com. And then also Ultra Sign Up is a popular website to check in on races, and you can sign up. Actually, that's where you would sign up. If you want more info, you go to the website. Yeah, those are two good spots to check out.
And we'll have both of those links in the show notes too for you guys. Cool. But
if you just want to volunteer, go to the website or Ultra Sign Up, and you can find a tab there that help us out. We can always use more volunteers, and everybody that volunteers, just like you're saying, it's such a friendly community. Everybody that volunteers usually has a really good time. So we'll put you somewhere out there.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. I know. I saw you guys throw an event the next day for all the volunteers, which is way cool. That just speaks so much on the community.
Just touching on that. That's like, that is a really big part of the race. And I think why John and I both are excited to be directing the race is just to give back and to the community, create an experience for the runners. We've been going around cutting some checks for the volunteer groups, even though we haven't had the race the last 2 years. So we still like to just give back and give thanks for the folks that really help out and make the race happen and make it a special race. I think that's one thing we get feedback is that the runners, they do feel that on the course. You know, they feel the community kind of come together. And that's, I think, a special part of the sport of ultra running and trail running. So
it's a special part, and it's really essential. Yeah. That's why we do it. A community is so important, especially in these sort of endeavors, and it's shared experiences. And all of us know when you have those shared experiences in the mountains, it's next level. It's an incredible place to do it. So we're stoked. Thank you guys for coming on the podcast, and we'll definitely keep promoting it as what's the race date for that matter?
August 6th, the first Saturday in August.
August 6th. And you guys, okay. August 6th is the race day. Is there a cutoff date for sign up?
Somewhere in July. I don't remember.
I want to say it's mid July. I don't know the date exactly, but yeah.
Or if you just want to experience some night running, because usually if you're doing longer runs, we have what they call the Mama Run, Moonlight on Mount Ascension. That's usually the Saturday or Friday night, closest to the first day of summer. That's a blast too. It's also on the website. You can look at that one too.
That sounds fun. Yeah.
Yeah, that one sounds cool. I've done some trail just hiking up on Ascension. That's a cool spot. So, all right. Awesome. Well, thank you fellas for coming on the podcast, and we'll catch you guys at the race.
We'd love to have you out. Thanks for having us.
Looking forward to seeing you.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
All right. Take care.
The information provided on the Mountain Wellness Podcast is for educational purposes only and not a substitute for professional medical advice. You should always consult a medical professional or healthcare provider if you're seeking medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.